Welcome to The Pen and the Yad. Join Rabbi Michael Siegel and author Jonathan Eich as they talk about Shabbat Zachor, remembering Amalek in America.
Let me ask you a hard question. In your new, you're very involved in your book tour on the King book and engaging in a whole variety of conversations about Dr. King. And here you are, this Jewish guy who has produced one of the most important biographies of Dr. King to accolades and all the rest. But have you experienced any pushback which you would characterize as anti-Semitic in any way or anti-Jewish?
Wow. I'm kind of surprised to say that I have not. And I've been very upfront in almost every speech that I've given and almost every discussion. I mentioned the fact that I'm Jewish and that I feel a special challenge in taking on the story of a Christian leader, maybe the most famous Christian leader in American history. And that as a Jew, I feel, more of an outsider's role in that. And I've been greeted mostly with appreciation. You know, I've had people say that it's wonderful that a Jewish person is taking this interest in writing a book that is so interested in King's Christianity. And I've had a little bit of pushback on people who say, you know, why do you have to include all the details about his flaws, about his extramarital affairs? I don't think that has anything to do with the fact that I'm Jewish. So I'd have to say I've been really pleasantly surprised that I have not felt any anti-Semitism directed at me. I've had a few people, just because I'm up on stage and because of the times we're living in, you know, ask me what I think about the situation in Israel right now. And I've answered the same way I would answer, you know, to you or to a friend with, you know, honesty. But again, it's been, the conversations have been really open and kind and surprisingly free of anti-Semitism.
I've had the privilege of talking with you on this podcast for a long time. So when you were thinking about the book and writing the book, I know that you were concerned.
Yeah, absolutely.
About pushback. And it's a pleasant surprise to note that that hasn't happened.
Yeah. And some of that concern was actually probably more of the concern was related to being a white person writing about this, mm-hmm. this central figure in Black history. And the Jewish part was secondary to that. The reception to me in the book has been great. And I think it's a hopeful sign that we don't have to view everything through the lens of, is he one of us? Is he another? Is he, you know, an outsider? Is he an insider? That there's a value in all people telling all stories, and we should judge them each individually based on their merits.
And speaking of stories, which is a quite a different one, is this Shabbat, as Shabbat ends, we're going to be celebrating Purim, which is the story of Jews in the diaspora, mm-hmm. who find themselves face to face with Haman. And Haman is a fascinating figure in the Bible. We just tend to think of him as this kind of solitary figure that rose up at a particular moment in time. But from the biblical perspective, Haman is part of a continuum that began with someone by the name of Amalek. And in fact, the Shabbat before Purim has a special name. It's called Shabbat Zachor, which comes from a passage in the book of Deuteronomy. Zachor et asher asa lecha Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to you. And Moses proceeds to talk about how Amalek attacks the Israelites as they were leaving Egypt. And he doesn't attack the caravan from the front, which you would normally expect where the fighting people are. He attacks from the rear, where the men, the women, the children are. And so Amalek doesn't actually want to win this war, because if he wanted to win the war, he would have attacked from the front. But he does want to inflict damage, which can only be seen as hateful and destructive and the ugliest form of humanity. And in the Torah reading for this Shabbat morning, the Torah says that we are to destroy Amalek. We're to fight against Amalek. And while the passage begins with Zachor, remember, and the word Zachor appears many times in the Bible, this is a unique passage because it ends by saying, Lo tishkach, don't forget. So remember, and then don't forget. So this is a very important issue. And so if you examine the history of Amalek, Haman is actually, according to the Bible, one of his descendants. And so this idea of Jew hatred, anti-Semitism writ large, this is a very old problem. And for Mordecai and Esther and the plot of Haman to destroy all the Jewish people, that is a story that has been repeated many, many times. So, and in the times that we're living, where anti-Semitism is rising rapidly, and it's very hard to see. Just this past week, there was a screening of a documentary that was made about the Nova Film Festival that was sponsored by the Simon Wiesenthal Center at the Logan Square Theater. And there was police protection, but the protesters, the Palestinian protesters, who were attacking Jews in America going to see a film about, you know, a massacre that took place, were screaming at the Jews, shame. And when one of the members of the congregation, our congregation, decided to walk through the crowd with a small Israeli flag, since every other flag there was Palestinian, he was pushed to the ground while they tried to wrest the flag away, and he was beaten. And the police actually didn't respond the way that you would have wanted to. They called for a backup, but nothing really came of it. And so this is the environment we're living in. And I guess I'm interested in thinking about, what does Shabbat Zachor mean to you this year?
Well, it tells me that this is an ancient problem, and that it's rooted in something really deep, and a kind of hatred that Jews have become the target for. I often wonder why we have historically been the target for this. Is it something about the fact that we were people of the diaspora, that we were always outsiders wherever we went, so that we were the easiest to blame? Was it something else because we had our own distinct religious beliefs that made us seem like we were other? But it just feels to me like throughout history, and this is a great reminder of it, that throughout history, we have been used as the target for whatever anger, hostility, frustration is boiling up in societies everywhere. And that we're seeing a really painful reminder of that now, as you know, the protests that you describe are not really only about what's happening in Israel right now. They're about this deep-seated anger that toward Jews that bubbles to the surface all the time, everywhere, and not just in this occasion. And it's really forcing me to think more about the roots of it and why it's so hard to kill that.
I've come to the conclusion, and this is not original to me, but that anti-Semitism is a cancer. Mm-hmm. It occasionally goes into remission, but it is not something that can be eradicated. And I think part of the reason for that is that anti-Semitism, or Jews, I think, become reflections of what people fear in a particular moment.
Right.
And perhaps that's part of a xenophobia that comes from Jews being different or other. We are a Am Yashvad Badad. We are a people that dwells alone. And you could make the argument that the Judaism of the Torah was meant to be lived in the land of Israel. When you have a people living separately in the diaspora, trying to live separately, that's sort of a prescription for mistrust. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the history. We become the reflection of whatever is being feared. And so on the left, you know, Jews are seen as white, you know, empowered, privileged, et cetera. And then not only that, but then associated with a country that has been vilified as a colonial state. And on the right, we are seen not as being white. We are seen as being muddiers of the bloodlines in America, anti-Christian purveyors of every negative moral issue in this country. So that's the one thing that people on the far left and the far right can agree on, that the Jews are the problem.
I totally understand that. And I think we've both read that piece in The Atlantic this month by Franklin Foer that suggests that the 70s and 80s maybe even into the 90s, there was a sense that maybe we were moving past this era of anti-Semitism, and that Americans seemed to embrace Jews as part of American culture. And, you know, Seinfeld is this very overtly Jewish show, and it's the most popular show in America. And there was a feeling that maybe we were moving on. But as you said, it was only in remission, this cancer, and that it's come back probably stronger than I've ever seen it in my lifetime.
And mine as well. I mean, the article itself, you know, we could just spend the entire time talking about the title. The Golden Age of American Jews is ending.
Right.
That's enough to make you open the magazine and give you a chill. And the article is really an important one that I think both of us would recommend to all of our listeners. It's a very important piece. And one of the things that Foyer does so well is he documents the evolution of American Jewry, and he tracks anti-Semitism as it goes along. And then he acknowledges, you know, how everything comes together. And, you know, I hope this is not a spoiler, but his last paragraph reads as follows. The case for pessimism, however, is more convincing. The forces arrayed against Jews on the right and the left are far more powerful than they were 50 years ago. The surge of anti-Semitism is a symptom of the decay of democratic habits, a leading indicator of rising authoritarianism. When anti-Semitism takes hold, conspiracy theory hardens into conventional wisdom, embedding violence in thought and then in deadly action. A society that holds its Jews at arm's length is likely to be more intent on hunting down scapegoats than addressing underlying defects. Although it's hardly an iron law of history, such societies are prone to decline. England entered a long dark age after expelling Jews in 1290. Tsarist Russia limped towards revolution after the pogroms of the 1880s. If America persists on its current course, it would be the end of the Golden Age, not just for Jews, but for the country that nurtured them. That's a powerful piece.
That is a powerful piece. And I would go further and say that it's not just the American democracy that's in danger, but the world democracy. We are seeing this tidal wave of authoritarianism. We are seeing democracy, you know, at a low point in America. The percentage of people in the world who are living in democratic societies is shrinking. And this is all part of that same thing that he's talking about, that when the ideology of hate and suspicion grow, then authoritarianism and dictatorship steps in to fill the void. And that's why the attacks on Jews is the most, it's the canary in the coal mine. It's the most obvious symbol of it. But tolerance, freedom, justice are under attack all over the world. And the Jews are just often, you know, the first people to see it happening to them.
I think that's that is true, but it's also not true to a certain extent. I think Jews are also, I don't know, maybe we'll use the term cognitive dissonance. Jews are sort of experts at also explaining things away. I remember when George Soros became a focus, I would say an obsession on the right, and every issue that was happening in the world today, every progressive liberal issue was laid at the feet of George Soros in a way that rhymed, shall we say, with the protocols of the Elders of Zion, as if this Jewish billionaire is really kind of controlling everything going on in the world, whether it's migration or any liberal cause. He's supporting it, and that's the cause of it, as if people of color don't have the wherewithal to actually be as effective as they are. You need the Jew behind all of this, kind of the marionette, you know, it's like marionette. He's always pulling all the strings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a classic example of how easy it is, or how convenient it is, or how tempting it is to blame the Jews. And you're right, Soros has become kind of the boogeyman in that way, that, you know, you just, it's like code word. You know, anytime you want to just blame the liberal agenda on somebody, you blame it on Soros now. So, that's a great example.
We have to sort of come back to the story of Purim, because on the one hand, you know, it's probably the story that we love to celebrate with our children most. And we celebrate it in a way that kind of feels not infantile, but it's certainly really geared for children. But the reality is if you read the story carefully, it's really probably the most serious story holiday in the entire calendar year. And at the end of the day, Esther is confronted with a choice. Remember that she's living as the queen, and the king doesn't know she is a Jew.
Right.
And she has denied her Jewishness. She's denied her Jewishness, by the way, at the behest of her husband, not her husband, but her uncle, Mordecai. Now, here you have the situation where Mordecai comes back to her and says, look, either you go to the king, you take the risk, you point the finger at the anti-Semitism, you acknowledge it and you speak out against it, or you don't. But if you think you're going to save yourself, you're not. You cannot escape by denying your Jewishness. And I think that that has a lot to do with something today where Jews are being told, yes, you can come into progressive circles. You just have to deny Israel. You have to walk away from whatever your Jewish values we deem unkosher, if you will.
I couldn't agree more. And it's a reminder that we have to act. We have to stand up for ourselves, that we can't just wait for these things to blow over.
I think that that's the name of the game. And that's a lesson, unfortunately, that we have to teach our children as well. And so as we come to Shabbat Zachor, I hope we do remember what Amalek did and what we must do to counteract that. Thanks, Jonathan.